This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Alongside Stephen Woods, Annie and Elston, and Gwen and Chris, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
And welcome back in. We got a pretty full house today for our San Diego Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. The pizza is here. Let's introduce our cast of characters today. I am Ben Higgins. You just heard Ben and Woods in the morning, 6 to 10 a.m. We have Annie and Elston. This is the time where you usually hear him in the middle of the day, but Annie Heilbrun is here. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, everyone.
Good to see everybody. Craig Elston is with us.
Check, check. Right here.
And then we've got our afternoon crew of Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr. It's good to see you today. You missed our first round table, but here you are. I think you were in Korea.
Something like that.
Korea.
I was a little ways away.
Last time. And we've got Chris Ello here on the other side of the room from me. Hello, Chris.
I just want to say that everybody's got a laptop computer. I brought a piece of paper with some notes on
old
it.
Old school.
Still old
appreciate
school.
Appreciate you. You yeah. be you.
The old newspaper writing days. Still
actually
have
got
notepad.
A pen and wrote some stuff down. I know that's weird.
Maybe it'll help you. Maybe you won't. So the Padres at this juncture, 4-5 through the first 9 games of the season, basically a week plus the 2 games in South Korea. And let's just start and go around and just give some initial thoughts on what you've seen from the San Diego Padres. Let's start over there with Chris Ello today, and we'll work our way around the room. But just kind of your initial impressions of the Padres through the first 9 games of the season, Chris.
Well, I'm glad they won yesterday, because otherwise my initial thoughts may not be as uplifting as they are. I'm liking what I'm seeing right now. The one thing that's a real problem is the pitching in the bullpen, and I don't expect that to continue to be a problem. So as long as they can score runs and manufacture runs like they did yesterday when they were able to get a win despite going 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position, I think it's all right. I think that there are some holes, there's some question marks, and we're going to have to see how those all play out. But it's much too early to make a total understanding of exactly what they have until we see another month or so of baseball. I'm all right so far.
I don't disagree with you, but you use the E word, which is kind of a problematic word for Padres fans. Craig, early. It's still early.
Well, it is.
We heard that a lot last year, and then it became not early, and then all of a sudden nothing really changed until it was too late. It is impossible to evaluate a team after 9 games of a season. This is simply first impressions, walking through the door, saying hi and having a brief chat and seeing a little bit from the team. But this is what we have to work with right now. So your first impressions of the 2024 Padres?
Well, I don't think it's a team that's played to their identity yet, because the Padres' 2024 identity seems to me needs to be an elite run prevention team, a team that has great starting pitching, that has great defense, and is able to shut down top-level offenses when they are right on a given night. And yesterday was the first time this season the Padres allowed fewer than 4 runs in a game. It had been 4 and above every single game. So that's not sustainable. And I don't, just like Chris, I don't think it will sustain that way. I think this team's starting rotation, hopefully we just saw it with you and Joe, and it's going to roll through the weekend that these guys are finding their feet. And I think when they do, this team will find its identity.
Tony, you're closer to this than any of us with the team in Korea. Now back here, through the first nine games, have you seen anything that makes you say, all right, I'm noticing stuff that is different from last season?
Without a doubt. And that is all in the offensive end. That's the situational baseball that they clearly have had discussions about prior to spring training, during spring training. And I think for the most part, they've executed at a much higher level offensively, despite, you can make the argument, not having as potent of an offense. And that's a credit to Victor Rodriguez and what he's preached from the onset, from the time he got the job, of what he thought this offense needed to look like. He has talked about a Petco Park offense, and that shouldn't be unfamiliar to Padre fans. I know we've been lost in the sauce over the past 3-4 years with the big boppers we had, but the offenses that, that have had success in this building have been the type that are, you know, left center to right center on a line. And you're starting to see some of that now. I think everybody is noticing the pitching hasn't lived up to Bill yet, but this is an incomplete. You know, I need everybody to get over their PTSD of last year's season and it being early and it just dragging on. You just can't evaluate a team 9 games into the season. So there are some things that I think make me hopeful in terms of the offensive side. I have very little doubt about the pitching and will that improve over time.
I kind of like your PTSD analogy because we all are a bit scarred from last season. And, you know, part of the early season here, Annie, is getting over that because this is a different season. It's a different team. Yeah, a lot of the faces are the same, but this is a completely different season. And I thought Wednesday's win, 3-2 over the Cardinals, is a perfect game to get over that PTSD because Padres did a lot of the same things they did last year. They went 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position. They failed to tack on against a pitcher that was struggling. They went a few innings without doing anything offensively. We saw that a ton last year, but there was one big difference. They lost almost all of those games last year, and they won it this time around. So Annie, give us some of your thoughts here on the early season differences and what you've seen.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It's hard to assess, obviously, this early in, but you have seen a good group of cohesive, together players who seem to have a good idea of what their expectations are for this year and how they're going to go out there and play. And the more that they get those kinds of wins that they had yesterday, where it seems a little improbable, you're not sure which way it's going to go. Like you said, they could have extended the gap offensively a few times, right? But you squeak out that win and it helps you prove to yourself that, like, okay, we can do this, and now we're going to go out there, we're going to be even more aggressive. I've loved that we're seeing production from the bottom of the order, that we're seeing guys like Campusano, like even Jerks and Profar, a Tyler Wade at times, right? Like, just doing really good things offensively and defensively, smart base running, good by Higashioka yesterday, of course. So a little bit of early depth that might be helpful for this team. And then once their front of the lineup or their top of the lineup really starts getting themselves going, because I don't even think like Manny is at all where he's going to be for the year. You know, I think we're going to see some good balance there.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And it's also the first week for a new skipper with Mike Shildt. And just like anything, you can't fully evaluate yet. I thought it was interesting when the Padres lost on Tuesday, they fell to 3-5, and I could sense the fan base starting to panic. Mike Shildt was very positive. He came out, even after the loss, he came out in that game and said, I really love what we're doing. I'm seeing improvements in the areas that I want to see improvements in. Tony, well, let me start here with you. When Mike Shildt says those, do you believe him? Is he trying to talk it into existence, or are you really seeing those improvements? And do you think Mike Shildt is the right guy for this job so far?
I'll start the last question. Yes, I do think he's the right man for the job. I do believe it. And if you've been around Mike Shildt at all, that is par for the course. Like, he is a positive person by nature. I think part of what makes him unique is that he's cut his teeth really at a developmental level. So there is a certain type of communication skills you have to have when you're trying to develop young men that are, you know, trying to be big leaguers. And he kind of has carried that with him. And I think that's what makes him a unique manager, because, you know, he doesn't have some of the credentials that some of these other managers have across the league. He didn't play at the big league level. And a lot of times that's problematic in this position. But for him, guys recognize immediately that there's a care about him and about what he's talking about. And I 100% believe him, because I've had conversations with him before spring training about where he wanted to see improvement. And it, from the level I get to watch at, it is obvious that there has been conversation and that there has been actual work done to improve in the areas that they struggled so badly last
year. Does anyone agree with Mike Schilt? Has surprised me a bit. I mean, we knew what we had heard about Mike Schilt, that he attention to detail, baseball lifer. And I think you get kind of a certain impression in your mind of what the personality of that person is going to be. Now, they're going to be very, you know, Buck Showalter, kind of almost militaristic. Mm. And he hasn't been like that. He's actually very relaxed and loose, and he's kind of got a lighter touch than I'd expect for a guy, Craig. I mean, with the attention to detail that he has, he also kind of brings a very light touch to the managerial role.
And that could be born of his age, you know, the wisdom accrued from doing this one time and then being out. A lot of times, I think everyone, when you have success, you experience a growth up a chart, you get to a job you want to be in, and then you're not in that job anymore. That can be a point where you start to really reflect on who you are as a person, how you interact with other people. And it's weird to say for a guy who's on a 2-year deal, which usually means win now, but there's almost a serenity to what Mike Schilt has been doing, that he feels comfortable in his own skin, in his own shoes. He feels like now he's like authentically himself in the job. And so far, 10 of 10, no notes for Mike Schilt. He has been everything you could ask for and more.
Yeah, and he seems, I think Craig made it, he seems patient. He's not feeling the pressure like you might expect to just win instantly and, hey, we better get out to a really hot start or everyone's going to panic. Seems like a patient guy who understands that this is a process and there's going to be some time that needs to be taken for the process to fully play out, but not too worried about like his own future. He seems like he really cares about just the players and the team and the organization.
Caring is the right word for him. And I think it's so important to emphasize what Tony said. He didn't play professionally. I'm sorry. He didn't play in the majors, right, you know, as a player. And really, you don't see managers who haven't done that. And so for him to be able to do that and still have the respect of his players, and it helps, of course, that he had the success that he did with St. Louis, so that he's got something to stand on there. And then obviously with their system altogether in the minors, it says a lot about him and the ability of him to get through to some of these players who are looking for that in their manager and want to know that you know the game and that you know what they're going through. And he's a competitive softie. Yeah. So like the thing about Mike Schilt,
I like that, competitive softie.
Like he's like last night swore and Crone zone, and he wants to, you know, he gives love. I think it's important for his players to know that he is backing them, you know, publicly and privately. But then he's super competitive. Yeah. Like behind the scenes, man, this guy is like, let's go out and bleep and win, you know?
I know, Chris, you're somewhat of a traditionalist when it comes to baseball and the way the game is played. One thing we've seen from Mike Schilt, the exact same top six in his lineup, all
wild.
Nine games. I mean, that's almost unheard of in baseball nowadays with matchups and lefty-righty and splits. They teams change it so often. Now, yeah, he's put his backup catcher and he's changed his third baseman a couple of times based on the matchups and given Jackson Merrill a couple of days off. But the idea of actually having a consistent top of the order, have you liked what you've seen from Mike Schilt when it comes to lineup construction?
Yeah, I do. I wish I was still doing the pregame show so I could have a little heads up on what the lineup's going to be. When I used to do the pregame show, they didn't give us lineups until like 2 minutes before the game, and it was different every night. So I'm thrilled with what he's doing. He's got everybody feeling very comfortable, and I think, you know, that's the secret of his success. He's funny. I mean, I didn't think any manager could be as comical as Mike Schilt is. I mean, he's like a one-liner after another from time to time. But I think his main goal is to put everybody in the best position to be successful, which is what every manager's goal is. But I think he wants them in a position where they're also very comfortable. And, you know, putting them in the same spot in the lineup is one way to do that. And also being relaxed as a leader is another way to do that. And I think he's been successful on both fronts. And, you know, all you need to do is look at the manager of the year balloting. Every year that he's been a manager, he's gotten at least one vote. And he won it, right? So this guy, you know, he's doing a pretty good job, and I'm not surprised about that.
I was going to say real quick, I think one of the things that, you know, should be pointed out is sometimes not having all the weapons that we had last year can be a good thing. You can't really shuffle this lineup in the way that you could shuffle around last year's lineup, you know, because I think the pieces fit a little bit better. And so you're going to see that top six ran out there as much as possible. I've loved the fact that they have been some continuity in the spots for the first nine games of the season.
I mean, growing up, I mean, you think of like when your dad played, I mean, sometimes he'd bat third in a season or sometimes he'd bat second, but he was pretty much there the entire year. I mean, Win, Gwynn, Kruk. I mean, you can think of years where it didn't change at all. Now, by the time you played, you know, managers started looking more at matchups and different combinations.
Yeah.
But as a player, knowing kind of before you even show up to the ballpark that you know where you're going to hit, you know where you're going to be, is that a valuable asset as a player?
Absolutely. And now, don't get me wrong. I think guys recognize when there is a shuffling going on, there's usually a reason for it. It's usually someone's not going well, the whole lineup's not going well, and so you respect the fact that, all right, my manager's trying to figure out something. And so you just go with the flow in most cases. But when you have a team that you can put the lineup the same way every single time or most of the time, there is some peace knowing who's in front of you, who's behind you, how that has set up throughout the course of the season. You start to, you know, players work best when there's some, you know, consistency, right? And so you get to see how innings unfold when you got Bogey at the top and Toddy at batting second. If you're hitting third or fourth, you know how those guys conduct an at bat. You know what you're going to be getting a lot of the times. And I just think it sets you up to have more success.
All right, I need someone to push back a little bit. Maybe it'll be Craig here. He's wearing the How to Bunt, Don't Hit a Dinger shirt.
I know
Craig believes in some of the modern matchups and numbers. Is it possible that the best order is always the same six? Or if you've got a lefty versus a righty, you got a hard thrower versus a soft thrower, you got a guy who dominates a certain pitcher in their historic matchup, should they always be in the same spot, or could Mike Schilt be putting together better lineups based on who they're facing on a given day?
He has platooned. He has had three platoons in his lineup, so I would suggest he's already done that, because Rosario and Wade/Pauly have alternated. Zokar has alternated with Merrill, right? I guess that's two. So am I forgetting one? No, I think that's it. Nonetheless, he's had those flips in the lineup.
Gashioka.
Yeah, that's a classic starter backup.
Right.
Right? So I think he's doing that lefty-righty. And I think right now, kind of speaking to Tony's point earlier, the players he has are generally two-way players. You know, Jake's a two-way player, Fernando's a two-way player, and on down the line. So there are some guys that you want to hard platoon, right? If you had, I'll keep speaking it into existence, if you had Brandon Belt on the team, for example, you would platoon him usually. Probably you'd have a right-hander in the DH spot when a lefty was up. And I think Schilt will continue to do that. Now, the only thing I would say in terms of pushback, I'd like to see one change in this lineup, because I think Ha-Sung Kim is a great leadoff hitter. And I think we're losing a couple of the things that make him great by batting him fifth, the number one being the opportunity to run. You rarely get to run in that five spot. You're up with two outs and a guy on, or you're in the middle of a lineup. You're blocked because somebody is in front of you. And I think Xander is the kind of hitter who can drive in those runs out of the five spot. But I think that Ha-Sung has a great batter's eye, and could give you a little bit more walks at the top of the order and could give you some speed at the top of the order that you don't want to ask Xander Bogaerts to do.
Now, Xander traditionally is a guy who'll give you some extra base hits. This year, it's been all singles for Xander, and he does have the tendency to hit ground balls, which can turn into double plays. He's done a pretty decent job getting on base, though, from the leadoff spot as well.
Annie,
let me ask you, Annie, because is part of this lineup that Mike Schild has constructed, because he only has Jake Cronenworth as his everyday lefty in the lineup, you have to split him up. He kind of has to be third. Whoever the two righties in front of him, the two righties behind him are, you can move around. But Jake kind of has to be third. Otherwise, they'll be vulnerable to those matchups for relievers later in the game because it'll be righty, righty, righty somewhere.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that's just a smart lineup move, right? Like, you've got to put your lefty in there and you've got to make sure that your pitcher isn't seeing all righties coming one through four or whatnot, right, Tony? I mean, I would think that that's just kind of where you need to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben kind of hit on it. Whether it's between one and two or three and four, there's got to be a breakup somewhere. And, you know, I think right now Mike likes Jake in that three spot. He's been good there.
Yeah.
Which puts the pressure on Jake. He's got to have that bounce back season. If he's going to be relied on in that spot, he's going to need the season that he had a couple of years ago. And guess what? So far, so good. And Mike Schilt waxed poetically about Jake after Wednesday's game. Wanted to just call him out in particular. Had a couple of really sensational defensive plays and talked about how he's consistently been hitting the ball hard and taking good swings and really putting together good at-bats. So, you know, Annie, do you feel like Jake is back here? I know it's so early again, just like all of our other evaluations. It's early, but are we seeing a different Jake Cronenworth here? Tony's like hiding his eyes. Like, am I jinxing things? Is that what you're worried about?
I know how much you love these questions, Annie. These are like your favorite questions in the world, too.
I think Jake looks fantastic. I think he looks like he's calm. He's relaxed at the plate. He talked over the offseason about being more vulnerable, being open to changes with what went on last year. I feel like whatever he worked on in the offseason looks like it's coming to some fruition, at least early on in the season. He's been giving the team what they need, both offensively and defensively. And I want to ask Tony, if you don't mind, Ben.
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay.
Here's my next question, too.
Well, what's your question? Because I want to know what you think. Like, if your manager's shouting you out in a presser, does that get back to a player? Do you think that they like that? Like, they want that, right?
Everybody
wants to hear praise, right?
Everybody likes that, right? I mean, it's
teacher's pet.
Right.
No,
everybody in here loves to have, you know, their boss, you know, big them up, especially in a public forum.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask, because I can't see the technical differences.
Right.
I don't study hitting enough.
Yeah.
Do you see something technically that Jake is doing differently? Because in my eyes,
it still looks like Jake,
looks pretty much the same to me. So what is different in your eyes, Tony?
From the physical standpoint, Jake's hands are higher. And he's kind of, without finding a better word for it, he's kind of trim the fat a little bit. So the movement he had where his hands started lower, he just had farther to go. Now he's kind of already closer to that positioning. And I spoke to him yesterday, actually, about, you know, the team philosophy, and we kind of got into some of the things he's worked on. And I think the main thing for him, and I think Victor Rodriguez, again, deserves a ton of credit for kind of pointing this out. I don't know if you guys remember spring training. Remember, he was walking a lot. He was walking like crazy. So he was seeing the ball well, but he wasn't quite, you know, putting the ball in play the way he wanted to. And he said right before the season, Victor came to him with a few drills. We didn't get into the drills, but he said basically the point was to help me get ready to the hitting position no matter what. On time, every time. And I think that's, for whatever the drills have been, they have worked, because we've seen him as the season got going, he's driving the ball, he's using the entire field, and there's less of the foul balls where they're good pitches to hit and he's fouling them off. He's now putting those in play. And now the defensive side has always been there. It's now Jake is starting to look a lot more like we saw 2-3 years ago. And as you said, that's going to be, you know, so important for this ball club.
The one thing you're probably not going to get a lot from Jake in the third slot, though, is home runs.
Yeah.
He'll get doubles, you'll get some triples, but those home runs that traditionally you'd expect your number three hitter to be a power guy. Chris, can the Padres survive offensively with a number three hitter that only hits 12 home runs or whatever you might expect Jake to hit this year?
Well, first of all, I was a little hurt that you did a whole segment of asking for pushback and you didn't ask for me.
Yeah, Mr. Pushback.
Because that's what I'm known for doing.
That's true.
That's basically why I was hired all these years ago, is to push back.
It's going to all these positive people over here.
No kidding, man. I was just over here waiting. You know, I'm a little concerned about, you know, what they have. I mean, I said it right at the beginning. I said I think there's some holes that are going to eventually need to be filled, and I think it's just a matter of taking some more time to figure out what those are going to be. And fortunately, there's some players out there that might be able to help them fill those holes. Craig mentioned one already. I think they can survive with Jake as the number three hitter. I don't know if they can survive with that, plus Jurickson batting sixth all year long. I don't know that Ha-Seong Kim drives in enough runs in the five spot all year long. So I do have some concerns about, you know, this lineup. I think everybody's going to have to perform at peak efficiency for them to keep scoring the kind of runs that they're going to need to score. So I think in a perfect world, Jake can fit anywhere in a lineup because he's a good enough hitter. But I don't know that this is a perfect world right now that the Padres have. I think they need another bat somewhere to round out this offense. And I hope that they see the same thing, because I just feel as time goes along, they're going to really wish they had someone else they could rely on in the lineup.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Craig, you had another point here?
Yeah, I just wanted to back up what Tony's seen with the eye test, with what the numbers are saying right now about Jake Cronenworth, because I think one of the things that I personally have been concerned about with Jake is going to his Baseball Savant page, which is where I am right now, and seeing his sliders go down year by year by year to the point where things like barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, sweet spot were at their career lows last year. Through nine games, he's right back to where he was in 2020-21. He's hitting the ball as hard as he ever has. His max exit velocity is right in line with his all-time career best numbers. And he's been extremely aggressive so far this year. He actually leads the majors right now in expected batting average at .403. But his walk percentage is a career low. He's at 2.9. He hasn't taken many walks yet. What that tells me is that pitchers have been challenging Jake Cronenworth.
Of course, they've he's sitting in front of Manny.
Right.
Don't get some pitches to hit.
And he is taking advantage of that situation, Tony.
Yeah, and that was where, you know, he struggled at last year, is being able to take advantage of some of the things. It's because mechanically he had some flaws. So it's good to see him back. Chris is right. But again, we're talking nine games in the
season. Yes, we are. We are. And this is another question that's going to be kind of an eye roll, Tony, for nine games into the season. But
let me get ready.
Asking, you know, how long are things sustainable? And I'll start with Annie here. Matt Waldron is the fifth starter.
Yeah.
And one start, you cannot evaluate pretty much any. He had one bad inning. And I made the point this week. All right, if you take a guy out for one bad inning, then take Joe Musgrove out of the starting rotation. Let's take Dylan Cease out of the starting rotation. Why would you do that to Matt Waldron if you're not going to do it to everybody else? But Matt doesn't quite have the track record as the other guys. Do you feel like the Padres have the right guy in the fifth slot here? And if not, what other option would you go with?
Well, I think that fifth spot is going to change throughout the year, regardless of even if Matt Waldron does an excellent job to start the season and then perhaps needs a little bit of a reliever, or like literally a reliever, or a little bit of a break, or starts to maybe falter at some point. I think they'll try someone else out in that spot, or let that spot be flexible at least, because it is it's an unknown spot. You don't really know who's going to fit in there and who's going to work in there, but I think you've got to let Matt Waldron have a chance. He had a weird offseason, like the rest of this pitching staff. Spring training, Korea, then he came back to San Diego, then went to Arizona with Avila to pitch a little bit, then came back. So just letting him get his footing a little bit in that rotation, I think, is important. And then assess, is he also the right guy for it? I think you could definitely see a Brito or a Vasquez or even some kind of bullpen configuration. But I don't necessarily, I wouldn't just say, oh, he's wrong after one start.
I don't know if this is fair, Tony, but to me it feels like Matt Waldron as a starter makes sense. Matt Waldron coming in the seventh inning to try to get three big outs in a tie game doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Is he in the right role? Do you feel like he'll be able to thrive here?
I'm with you on that. It's hard to see Matt Waldron coming out of the bullpen other than a long relief scenario.
And they have a long reliever right now.
They have one. And so I think, as Annie said, one thing that was really good about the Dylan Cease deal was it gave the Padres options in that fifth spot, because now Michael King slides down, and now you can use a Vasquez, a Brito, a Waldron, an Avila. And listen, all teams, with the exception of a few, have spots like this where they're almost auditioning spots until you get closer to the deadline and you can kind of evaluate what's available, what's not available. And then, you know, those type of spots get addressed. For the Padres, I just think they have three, four, you know, and who knows what happens with Morty Hone down there. Can he get his thing together where he's healthy? They have some options that they can use in that fifth spot. Waldron had a rough one. Got to let him have a few more starts. But even, I think Andy's right, even if he had thrown the ball well, this fifth spot, I think, was going to be a revolving door, at least early in the season.
We saw more knuckleballs from Waldron in that last start than we had seen at any other time. And I was really excited about weren't there, Craig. I mean, what are your kind of Waldron thoughts here?
Well,
on the round
as the primary Waldron apologist on 97.3, I'm glad you brought me into the conversation here. I was, at, you know, as you were, of course, Tony, but a lot of us were at the game, but like watching from the stands, I saw a lot of things I liked from Matt Waldron. Let's start with, he struck out 7 in 4 innings. Okay. That's not a small amount. And when you say, well, he's getting racked around, he also struck out 7. He had 9 swings and misses. He had 19 foul balls. He got to a 2-strike count on basically every hitter that he faced other than Matt Carpenter dropping a bunt on him. He would get to 2 strikes. And it looked like in the early part of the game, he was both overthrowing the knuckleball with 2 strikes. They were coming in at 80, 81, 82 instead of 77. Those were the ones that were getting hit. They said afterwards, those are the ones that flattened out, that spun a little bit. Also, I've noticed, Tony, that the second time through, he was taking advantage then of hitters sitting knuckle with 2 strikes, and he would get that fastball by them at 91 miles an hour. Yeah. In situations where you go like, oh my God, 91 in the bigs, you're going to get smashed. Well, not if they're looking 77. 91 looks awful hot. I think there's plenty to build on for Matt Waldron. I think he's an average starter. He has the chance to be an average starter in the bigs. Sometimes average starters give up 4 runs in 4 innings, and that's kind of part of the lot of it. But the only other role I'd see for him is one the Padres have never utilized, which is opener. Somebody who could come in, befuddle you for 2 innings, and then you bring in Brito or Avila or someone else. I think you got to keep rolling him out there.
Tony, did you have to face...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll Alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Any knuckleballers like Steve Sparks, your career?
I faced R.A. Dickey more than my fair share of times. And, you know, the knuckleball's kind of evolved a little bit. It used to be like the slow, fluttering type pitch. You see guys, you see Matt, you see R.A. Dickey, all of a sudden they can throw it a little bit harder. They can take a little bit off. So it's evolved a little bit. I think that's the part that makes it tough for Matt is, as you said, he got to two strikes a lot. He was ahead of most of the batters, but being able to put them away is the tough part. What makes it difficult to be a guy with a knuckleball as opposed to a knuckleballer is you're not, well, at least prior to this start, you're not throwing it enough to be able to get a guy off your fastball, right? But in that last start, what you saw was him throw it more, gets guys off the fastball, but does he have another pitch to finish guys?
Was Craig's point about maybe being amped up first start of the year that that's not good for a knuckleballer?
Maybe so. Because the two knuckleballs that got hit weren't good knuckleballs. And I can't recall at any other point seeing him throw like bad knuckleballs. So maybe he was a little bit fired up. And, you know, a lot of the traveling he did, all that can throw a pitcher off. I think he should get a pass for this one. We'll see how his next one goes.
Chris, you ever dabble in the knuckleball back at San Diego State? I mean, I know you had every other junk ball in the left-handed repertoire.
Yes, it wouldn't have changed Shots anybody's fired. Perspective. No, I did throw nothing but junk. I threw a few on the sidelines, but never won in a game. But I like Waldron in the five spot, and I think he stays there for a while. And I like him even more now that I watched Brito try to catch Ben Higgins. Opening
all right, so that was going to be my little my seventh inning stretch question.
I was
here.
A little bit upset with Brito not reaching out to get your low break.
And I appreciate
that.
He
ran off the field so fast. I don't even know.
The question for everybody is: did my pitch bounce or not?
It did bounce.
Well,
because
every pitch bounces if gravity takes effect.
Oh, I see. He didn't reach out.
Someone's got to catch it, or it's going to bounce. That's true.
I felt Brito. Fault, essentially.
Eddie brought up something that brought the picture to my head. He did get off the field.
I will cop to that. I wanted to get out there, which leads me to believe
you think you bounced it, which is why you got off the field.
I did
so
because
bad.
It got away.
I mean, when, in the clip, I heard him say, "I bounced it." So
he was mad.
The ball bounced off seven people after it hit Johnny Brito. So obviously, I thought I must have thrown the worst pitch in history. He's like walking over to the Padres dugout to pick it up. I really thought I threw it pretty well.
This is the best
like
thing.
Straight.
Go back and look at him. And because all the other guys that caught, they give him a hug. They sit and talk to them. Ben was like, he gave Brito a quick hug. And then
he was trying to see it.
You can see the panic settling in on his body there.
Are you sure that you didn't throw a knuckleball? Because Brito treated it like the old Bob Uecker story where you wait till it stops rolling and pick it up.
He did.
Because I didn't think it was that low of a pitch. If he reaches out, he might be able to save you.
It was kind of a low ephus sort of change up. It didn't have a lot of velocity, It might have crossed the plate at the knees. And that's
never
a strike.
Heard of a low ephus.
You're right, though. I was ready to scamper off that field and get out of the spotlight as fast as possible. I said hi. No one told me there was a picture, though. This was all going on behind my back. And I did. Apparently, they were yelling, Ben, come back.
Oh, my gosh.
Just can we get the game started, please?
I got to say that our TV was on, and we don't go to commercial. So I got a chance to just, I laughed. I had a good chuckle on that one. That was good.
All right. I don't know if you guys saw. You probably did. I know Annie and Craig were talking about the Juan Soto story in The Athletic. And I wanted to see if you guys had some just more thoughts for the round table here of just some of the observations that were made by Britt Giroli in The Athletic about maybe Juan Soto's not connecting as well with the Padres when he came over here, the efforts of the Padres. Tony, I don't know what you saw. It sounds like the Padres tried really hard behind the scenes to make Juan Soto feel comfortable and connected, and it never totally happened while he was here, yet he still was very productive, had a really good 2023 season statistically, individually. What did you make of any of those observations from that piece?
To be fair, I haven't read the article yet, but you know, from what I gather, I know the Padres did make a ton of efforts, and I know that outside of, you know, of this, of Petco Park, it sounded like he really wanted to stay. He didn't really necessarily want to be traded. I think he was kind of over the whole trade thing and having to start from scratch again. I think it's clear, and I think Nelson Cruz kind of made mention to this, that, you know, his drive can kind of turn him off towards teammates, which he said, Nelson Cruz, is why he thinks he'll fit perfectly in that New York setting. And so, listen, I think ultimately what matters is the Padres couldn't afford to bring him back, which is why they made the move they made. I'm almost positive A.J. Preller, that was not an easy thing for him to move Soto, but when the time came, they had to make the move. He made the right move. And I think, you know, sometimes pieces just don't fit. We were just talking about the shuffling of the lineups. I mean, part of the reason why you could shuffle that lineup is because Soto could really hit anywhere. Manny can hit a bunch of different spots. And as a manager, when things aren't working, it's so tempting to start moving these pieces around to see how you can get something going. But I just think ultimately it was best for both pieces, right? Juan gets to move on to a place where he's probably got a chance to sign a lucrative extension. The Padres get some relief financially and are able to bring in pieces and flip another piece together. I mean, so they've both sides so far, it's worked out for it.
Chris, part of me says this is the biggest non-story ever. If the Padres find a way to win a couple of one-run games
100%.
And make the playoffs, no one is talking about Juan Soto's lack of connection with the team. They're just enjoying a great run and maybe a postseason run. Is there anything to any of this in your mind?
Tony knows that I'm not.
He can't wait to answer.
No, Tony knows I'm not the world's biggest Juan Soto fan, and I never was for a lot of the reasons that were in the article. But those are all things that I perceived. I always felt that Juan Soto's a little disconnected from this team. So that was just an assumption I made from watching from afar. So when they traded him, I felt like it's a little bit addition by subtraction. I think Juan Soto gets a better spot for him in New York, in the limelight, with all of the big media and all of that, and the Padres can go do their thing here in San Diego. It's unfair of me to be any more critical than that article is, because I truly don't know. I mean, I'm not in the clubhouse every day with these guys. You know, Juan Soto's an amazing talent. I wasn't a big fan of his work in the field or on the base pass. I mentioned it many times on the show.
Having a great year defensively right now.
Yes, oh, I know. He's doing everything right now. But anyway, it's a hard argument to make.
Sure.
It's a hard argument to make that that Juan Soto isn't my, you know, all-time favorite baseball player, because statistically he's through the roof. But I think the Padres can get along fine without him.
I do think it's a bit unfair, and I'm not saying you're doing that. I just, in general, to be like, all of this lies on Soto or Paul Melvin or whatever. Like, it's no. Everyone in there is a big boy. They're men. They have responsibility for their own actions in there and how they're going to play the game and show up to the facility every single day. There were rumblings at times of Soto being his own kind of guy, you know, having his own routines and things that he liked to do. But there were also those for other guys as well. And for Soto, like, maybe he put the AirPods in during meetings or things like that. I'm not sure how detrimental that might be in terms of like a team meeting or a hitters meeting or things like that. But he also got on base. He also helped his team by producing. And so I think that there's something to be said about that as well. But I wouldn't sit here and be like, this is all Juan Soto's fault.
Tony, did you ever see players tune out coaches during a meeting because they didn't want to hear what they were saying?
I haven't seen them put AirPods in. That's on another level.
He didn't want to be affected by certain tells.
Players definitely. I mean, I played in the era before AirPods, so I'm sure if there were some around, there would have definitely been in some guys' ears. It happens, and how do you go about blocking that out without being disrespectful? Because that ultimately can come off not only to whoever's delivering the message, but the rest of the teammates that are out there. But I wasn't there for it, so it's hard for me to speak on.
Craig, is part of this narrative self-serving for the Padres?
Of course.
That, hey, if Juan Soto wasn't the problem, then maybe the problem's still here. And no one wants to think that the problem is still sitting somewhere in the clubhouse. So does this serve the Padres well to just, whether it's true or not, what Chris said, maybe Juan Soto wasn't connecting and now the team is better off without him?
I think that it's not just the Padres. I want to be clear about that. Every team that's in a sticky situation and a player leaves and it's a little bit political, there comes out a story with unnamed sources
all the time.
That help soften the blow, make the departing team look a little bit better and make the player look a little bit worse. I think all of that happened in Briccioli's story, and I think the sources, whoever they might have been, got the job done, because here we are. We're all talking about this, right? What I took from that article more than anything else was that Juan Soto was never going to sign here. He wanted to be on the East Coast. He prefers being on the East Coast. It's much closer to the Dominican. It's much closer to his family. He wants to make that choice, and he wants to be the highest paid player in Major League Baseball. He wants to match or beat Otani's contract without deferrals. It's right there in the story. His intent is spelled out directly.
That's a shot across the bow to all 30 teams out there. You will be getting no discounts or money cut off. I want all my chips up front.
He does, and he's going to earn that deal. Where I agree with Chris completely is that there was a disconnection last year. And however you want to say it's this guy, it's that guy, it's another guy, that was a disconnected team. Disconnected teams don't win. They don't win. I have been around plenty of championship teams that had less talent but were connected. And I've been around great teams that had more talent than everyone but were disconnected and found a way to lose. And that connection is the thing that I think Mike Schilt has brought. But I think that culture has come from the leaders of the team. I think Joe Musgrove made explicit mention of it yesterday. And we said, we've got a closer that'll get us four or five outs. And we need that around here. He said that we need that around here. Those were his words. So I think this is a team now that is more, Chris, like everyone for each other. And less of what we saw last year, which kind of felt like a bunch of expensive pieces.
The Nine Musketeers, all for one and one for all. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. So I've saved the last quarter of the program for one last issue and question. And that is, what can A.J. Preller do? Assuming, as we've all kind of read, they're trying to stay under the luxury tax threshold, and they've got reportedly around $12 to $14 million before they get that level. There are still free agents out there. The name Tommy Pham, Brandon Belt has been brought out, but we also saw a piece in The Athletic that came out that AJ has targeted Luis Arraez of the Miami Marlins, who
makes kicking tires
$10 million. He's made offers. It hasn't happened yet. Annie, let's start with you. If there's one last move that can be made, what are you doing if you're A.J. Preller to the final piece of perhaps the puzzle here?
Oh, I think that if you're able to bring in another hitter, it certainly can't hurt. If you're able to bring in another lefty, I can't imagine that that would hurt either. But a veteran guy who's got experience, who has been in a lot of situations in Major League Baseball, that can help the team and just give the other guys then more depth. I mean, really what it's doing is maybe someone's going to disappear for a while or be sent down or whatnot, but it's giving you more depth, more time. It's essentially insurance, a little bit of insurance. So I've always said, bring Tommy Pham in. But heck, okay, bring Brandon Belt, bring Luis Arraez. I think any of them would work.
You mentioned a lefty, Jesus Luzardo's name also coming up as a potential target for the Padres. And obviously the prospect cost to get one or both of those right. would be very high for the San Diego Padres to attack. But could this be a reason why the Padres haven't made a move yet? That if they spend that money on Tommy Pham or they spend it on Brandon Belt, then they can't even make that offer and go over the luxury tax. Is there some patience at play here?
I think so, and they've shown patience. A.J. Preller has shown more patience, I think, this offseason than we've seen in a while. And he's had to show patience because the financials are different for this team. If he does go out and spend a lot of money, and I know you're talking prospects, but say you spend more money, you've got to leave yourself a little bit of a buffer under that CBT for the trade deadline, if your team is in it and everyone hopes the Padres are in it and they're picking up pieces right there.
I'm sorry, this chat is wild.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm sorry.
Do you ever watch the chat?
I have. This is the first time I've ever seen it going.
That's probably why. I bet we probably need to stop watching the chat. I love you guys.
You'd be amazed at our chat in the morning, Tony.
It was wild. Someone's asking what scurvy is now.
It knock your socks off. That's for sure.
You know what would be a good bit is if you went down and you kind of,
you can comment in there, too, if you want.
Comment, are you right or you wrong?
No, I'm staying out that far.
Go ahead, Ann. I'm sorry. I don't know that you can give up a lot of those. I mean, look, prospects are always commodities, right? But I'm not sure how much it would take for Luis Arraez to make that kind of
I'm going to hold off on Tony for a second because I know he's got some thoughts here. Craig, are you willing to give up any of the top five prospects in a deal for either Luis Arraez or Jesus Luzardo? And we're talking about, I mean, no one wants to give up Salas.
Right.
Obviously.
No one will give up Salas.
I mean, he's as untouchable as any prospect that we've seen.
Absolutely.
Here, it seems pretty early to give up Leo DeBrees as well.
Yeah.
But Snelling and Lesko, I think they're the kind of the coveted but still maybe available, maybe not guys that would be targeted.
You know, this is how I want to answer that, which is to not answer it. Luis Arraez, in terms of expected future WAR for the next 2 years, is less than Dylan Cease. I think the price to get someone like Luis Arraez is less than Dylan Cease. So when I see people writing, oh, it's Snelling and Lesko and Head and DeVries for Arraez. No way. No way. He's a singles hitting infielder with very limited defensive value. Okay. So the price won't be that high. Would they have to give up one? Maybe. Would I want to do it? Probably not. Having said that, I'm curious what you think, Tony.
There's no hitter in baseball who is more like your dad right now, I would say, than Luis Arraez.
As close to the perfect player for Petco Park as I've ever seen.
I think so, too. I have questions of fit. I mean, offensively, he fits. But where are you playing him? I mean,
DH? Left field?
He did play some left field.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying,
is it insurance if Ha-Sung Kim leaves as a free agent next year and then he can play second or Jake can play second and he's playing some first?
This is kind of going back down the path of having too much to be able to put in. I think out of all the three you guys name, as much as I love Luis, and God knows I'd love to watch a hitter like that on an everyday basis, there's no doubt. Tommy's probably the one that fits the best, right? I mean, I know he's right-handed, but he certainly can play left field. He can certainly platoon. You can use him however you want to. I think in that clubhouse, you need somebody that's a dog in a good way. And I think he fits that mold. He definitely isn't going to let things slide in there that, you know, mm-hmm. perhaps slid in there last year. There's going to be some tough conversations when he's in your locker room. But I think in terms of fit, you know, for me, Brandon Belt doesn't do it for me. He plays first base. I know he's dabbled in the outfield, but he's not a good outfielder. You already have a new center fielder. You have a platinum winner on the right side. I just don't think you want to lose anything defensively, because if what you say is true at the beginning, that this team's identity is going to be around defense and pitching, you certainly don't want to take away from what you already have. So I got to emphasize this again. I would love to watch Luis Arraez on an everyday basis. Unless it's DH, I just don't see how he fits.
Now, he's a two-time defending batting champion, but it doesn't mean
Yes.
He's going to do it again this year as well. He's off to a bit of a slow start.
It's not even the batting champions, though. It's the consistency of what he does.
I get it. Adam Frazier looked pretty good for the Pirates.
Oh, it's not the same. It's not the same as Adam Frazier.
Luis Arraez is not Adam Frazier.
It's
slander.
I'm taking poor Elo here. I feel like we're going to throw it
No, we've got time. We're going to get some.
I just agree. Like having that presence in the clubhouse, people think, oh, Tommy's intense. Tommy
holds you
accountable. He's intense. He will rub you the wrong way if you're doing something that warrants it, but then he will bring everybody in terms of preparation and things like that.
Mike Schilt, again, had him. Help bring him up. Help develop him. Right. Like, there's nobody who probably knows Tommy as well as Mike Schilt. So I just, out of those guys, I like Tommy the most.
I agree.
Chris, what about you? Where would you spend your last nickel or your last prospect here to finish off this team?
He's my partner, isn't he? Tony Gwynn Jr. hit it on the head. First of all, Luis Arraez would mess everything up. Where are you going to play him? Again, like Tony said, you put him in the infield where he's best. Who's going to go play the outfield? The Padres need a left fielder, an everyday left fielder. I think Jurickson's a great fourth outfielder. I don't think he's an everyday left fielder batting sixth for an entire 162 games. Tommy Pham is easily the best player that is available to fit this Padre club right now. In the clubhouse, on the field, right-handed or left-handed, I'm not a fan of Brandon Belt either. I would go all in on Tommy Pham.
I will say that when Manny returns to third base, they need a DH, though. Tyler Wade, an exciting player, but you're losing more value by putting him in a DH.
You're right. It's a short-sighted thought because you're right. At some point, Manny does go to third. You need a DH.
And that's why I want Belt for that time.
And quite honestly, any of those three would be a huge upgrade over what they're going to end up with at DH. If it's just Eggy or Graham Pauly or Tyler Wade on an interchangeable basis somewhere at the bottom of the order, and you can put in a Tommy Pham, a Brandon Belt, or a Luis Arraez, who's more of a middle of the order or top of the order hitter, you're making the team better by acquiring any of those players. So ultimately, I'm going to be disappointed if at least one of those moves is not made with whatever remaining money they have. I don't know which one's going to be the right one. I think there's some good arguments for all of them. You know, the Tommy Pham argument was made. The Luis Arraez argument was made. But Brandon Belt's the biggest argument. He had a great offensive season last year. He's left-handed. He could be the DH. Just plug him right in, and he could solve a lot of your issues in your lineup construction as well. There's an argument for all three of those guys right now. I just kind of hope the Padres end up with one of them before all is said and done, before someone else decides, you know what, we're desperate enough, we're going to go steal them. Because there's a bunch of other teams that have needs as well out there.
And we saw the Giants do that, right? When they went and got Chapman and Snell, they said, and when the Diamondbacks got Montgomery, they went and they found a player to help them that was out there on the market that changes the Padres' playoff percentage. So I agree, and I'm not married to Brandon Belt. I just look at him as a left-handed option that could be your everyday DH and then a spell first baseman every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
For your team, Tommy makes you locked into seven right-handed hitters a good portion of the time. Blue Jays made the playoffs with a seven right-handed batter lineup last year. It doesn't disqualify you as a team, but to get to your general point, and I think Chris agrees too, we're a hitter short. I said it going into the season, and I say it now. We're a hitter short.
Yeah, there's a hole that needs to be filled somewhere. And I think we've talked about who potentially can fill it. You know, I think, you know, I don't want to pick on Jurickson. I really love this guy. I mean, he's one of my all-time favorite guys to be around.
424 on base percentage, by the way.
So far, so good.
He's a pro. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. Like, he
pun intended.
And a farm.
Pun intended. His value is what he brings to you on an everyday basis from an at-bat standpoint. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a just throwaway at-bat. But, you know, as you get deeper in the season, you're going to need more.
By the way, he's the most Tommy Pham-like player they have.
Yeah, he is.
In the lineup. He's intense. Everyone sees him smiling and think he's the friendliest, nicest guy.
Edge.
Do not cross Jurickson Profar.
He's got an edge. He's competitive. And he'll call out too. And I think the more, to Tony's point, you need some of those guys in there. You do. It helps out so much in terms of
it
just
balances out the ecosystem. And
he's already addressed the team once this year. I mean, it's like one week in, and Jurickson's the guy who feels like he needs to
say
something.
Shout out to Jurickson too. He got his 10 years the other day.
What does that mean? Just quickly, we got a minute here.
That is the magic number for all pros. You max out pension wise. There's so many benefits. You get your gold card, which means you can walk into any state. Stadium on any day, have a seat. It's a pretty sweet.
It's always a party. They have like a cake or some sort of celebration.
It's a big deal.
Anytime a guy gets their 10 years of service,
what 10% of guys
day.
Get to that? I think.
Yeah. How many years did you get?
I got eight.
Eight. Oh, man. Can we get you back in there for a couple more years?
I have to be on the coaching staff somewhere.
Doesn't broadcasting count?
Yeah, nah, it doesn't count. It don't put you on the... It don't count the broadcast.
All right. Remember, every Thursday, you can catch us here live first 10 to 11 a.m. on 97.3 The Fan. It's our Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Thanks to Braden Engineering today. For Chris Ello, for Craig Elston, for Tony Gwynn, for Annie Heilbrunn, I'm Ben Higgins, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Catch you later.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll off of?
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.